Yes, this is Rabbi David Sedley on Hanukkah, the Greeks and Kabbalah.
Where'd that button go? Okay, when you finish pitching, I want to push the red button so get it out of your face. The festival of Hanukkah is unique in that it has at least three completely different meanings depending on where and who you are. If you ask, actually four meanings, if you ask a less affiliated American Jew what is Hanukkah, it's the Jewish Christmas, hence the Hanukkah bush. If you ask a more involved American Jew what is the message of Hanukkah, it's a message of the oil, a message of spirituality overcoming the materialism of the Greeks, of the oil that burned for 8 days miraculously. It's a festival celebrating God's involvement in the world and miraculous divine intervention. If you then come to Israel and you ask a Zionist Israeli, what's the message of Hanukkah? It's a story of a military victory. It's the triumph of the minority over few over the many, which of course is the story of Israel itself. And if you ask a more involved person in Israel, Hanukkah, the message of Hanukkah, is the triumph of Jewish values over Greek wisdom, over Chochmas Yevanis. The truth is that, I'm not sure about the Jewish Christmas, but all the other three approaches are valid. And we even see a contradiction between the way Hanukkah is presented in the Davening, in Al HaNisim, and the way Hanukkah is presented in the Gemara. And of course, interestingly enough, there's no tractate Hanukkah. It's the only festival, with the exception of Shavuos, it's the only festival that doesn't have its own tractate in Moed. So I want to talk about this fourth meaning of Hanukkah, which is the idea that Hanukkah celebrates the triumph of Jewish values and beliefs over what's called Chochmas Yevanis, Greek wisdom. And I think comparatively recently, this message has been distorted. And what there's confusion as to which kind of Chochmas Yevanis is a problem, is forbidden, which kind of Chochmas Yevanis we defeated on Hanukkah, and which kind of Chochmas Yevanis is a very positive thing to the extent that it may be a mitzvah to learn it. We sang Ma'oz Tzur a few minutes ago. I don't know if you sang all the verses or not, but if you got as far, it goes through the four exiles of the Jewish nation. And you get to the verse about the Greek exile. Yevanim nikbitzu alai, azai bimei chashmanayim, chashmanim. Uparatzu chomos migdalai. The Greeks breached the walls of the temple. Hang on a second, I thought that was the Babylonians and the Romans. What does it mean in Ma'oz Tzur when it says Paratzu Chomos Migdalai? Started for 10, anyway.
They made holes in the wall.
When did the Romans smash down the walls of the temple? The answer is, Ben says the Mishnah in Midas, Midot. Midot is a there's no Gemara on it, but there's a Mishnah and it describes, well, kind of a Gemara. It's a Mishnah which describes the dimensions of the temple. And in chapter 2, I was going to make source sheets and handouts and everything, but things were crazy with the bar mitzvah yesterday and life in general, so I'm afraid you're going to have to either take notes or listen to the tape. In Midas, chapter 2, Mishnah 3, it says, going in from the Harabias in towards the Kodesh Kodesh, it says, Lefni mimenu, on Harabias, there was Soreg, Gevor Asarat Fachim. There was a fence, which was only 10 Tfachim high. It was not going to keep out many of the enemies. 10 tefachim high is not as table height. V'shalosh esrei partzos hayu bo. There were 13 holes in this soreg. Shepartzum malchei Yavan, that the Greeks made these holes in the soreg. V'chazru v'gadrum, and then presumably the Chashmonaim came back. The Jews rebuilt the wall where it was smashed. So far, so good. The Chashmonaim defeated the Greeks. The Greeks made holes in the walls. The Chashmonaim rebuilt the walls. Then the Mishnah says, "V'gazru kenegdam shalosh yisrei ishtachavayot." And the rabbis decreed that when you passed any of these 13 former holes in the wall, you had to bow down. When entering or leaving the Beis HaMikdash, there were 13 places where they would bow, and these were the 13 places where the Greeks had breached the walls of the temple. So there's something funny going on over here. On the one hand, we're singing a song celebrating the downfall of the Greeks who made the holes in the wall. On the other hand, the Anshei Knesset HaGdola, Shaira Anshei Knesset, or the Chachamim afterwards, it doesn't say who made this rule, said that these holes in the wall are so important that we have to bow down at 13 places in the temple. There's a lot of Torah written about these 13 things, and they correspond to the 13 meters of Rachamim. And what the stroke, there's a wonderful piece in Or Gedaliahu, if you have time to learn some Chassidus. Or Gedaliahu on Hanukkah explains this in the most beautiful way. But I'm not going to do that. What I see from here is that there's something positive, something positive in the Greek influence on Judaism. There's something from the Greeks that came into the temple. The other exiles, we kept outside. But there was something about the Greeks. They made a breach, we filled it in, and then we're still remembering and bowing down at these 13 places. So what I'd like to suggest tonight is that that what we got from the Greeks, the reason the breaches in the wall are so important, are because they gave us a new way of relating to God, which is through the way of Greek wisdom, which we'll see is a tool, if used properly, which can bring us closer to God. There's a Gemara in Sota, at the very end of Sota, Daf Memtes, lists all sorts of different events, historical events, Jewish people. It says, "Befumo shel Titus gazra atas kalos, v'shelo yilmad Adam es b'no Yevanis." They made there was a gathering, the rabbis, and they made a decree that it's forbidden for a person to teach their child Greek. Now, of course, you're going to jump up and down and say that can't possibly be right, because we know from the Mishnah in Megillah that even according to Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, who says that a Torah cannot be written in any language, but even according to Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, a Torah can be written in Greek. We know the story of Talmai HaMelech, who translated the Torah into Greek. We know that Greek was the lingua franca of a large part of the Jewish world in the time of the Second Temple. So you're right, and if you look on the side, you see, and if you look in the same Gemara Sota appears also in Bava Kamma and also in Menachos, and you'll see that it shouldn't be teaches the son Greek, but teaches the son Chachmas Yevanis. Teaches the son Greek wisdom. Why is it forbidden for a person to teach their child Greek wisdom? So we have a story, which is really the sad, almost conclusion of the Chanukah story, the part we don't talk about. Because the Chashmonaim, the family of Kohanim from Modi'in, who came and with a few people managed to defeat the might of the Greek army and get rid of the Greek influences from the temple and get rid of the Greek influences from Klal Yisrael, those same Kohanim, those same Chashmonaim, within a couple of generations, were the ones themselves who brought the Greek influence into the temple, were the same ones who led to the destruction of the temple, were the same ones who became the Tzedukim, the Sadducees, based on the influence of Greek culture on the Jewish people. The Kohanim were very suspect by the end of the Second Temple period. The Sanhedrin and the Kahuna Gedola was controlled by the Sadducees, who were descendants of the Chashmonaim, until eventually Herod came and wiped out the last of the Chashmonaim. And the Gemara in Bava Basra says, if somebody would come to you today and say they're a descendant of the Chashmonaim, you know they're lying, because or you know they're a slave, because there's not a single person from the Chashmonaim family who survived. The Ramban on Chumash explains the reason for their sin. I don't want to go into this, but we know that the Malchus, the kingship, has to be from the house of Judah. That the Melech, the Mashiach, has to be a descendant of David HaMelech. The Chashmonaim were kings, but they were Kohanim, they were from Shevet Levi. And therefore, they were eventually wiped out. So we have a story, a tragic story, of really the antithesis, or maybe the continuation, of yesterday's parsha. We read about brothers hating brothers. We have the same story in the time of the Chashmonaim. Tanu Rabbanan, says the Gemara in Sota. Keshetzaru malchei beis Chashmonai ze al ze. When the house of Chashmonai was fighting against each other, two brothers, both wanted to be king. Hayahorkanus b'mechutz v'astobulus mi'befnim. They changed their names from Jewish names to Greek names. And Hyrcanus was outside Jerusalem, laying siege to Jerusalem, to the temple. And Aristobulus was inside, defending Jerusalem. So, because Sach HaKol they were Jewish and they all believed in the value of the temple, so b'chol yom v'yom hayu mishalshalim dinarim b'kupa, every day the Jews inside Jerusalem would lower a bucket of money down the walls of the old city. I guess it wasn't called the old city then, it was just the city. They'd lower down a bucket of dinarim, umalin lem tamidim, and the people outside, Hyrcanus' people, would put a sheep in the bucket and they'd send it up so they could do the daily sacrifice. Hayasham zaken echad. There was one old man, wise old man, Shayam Akir Bechachmas Yevanis, who knew Greek wisdom. And he was inside La'az Lahem Bechachmas Yevanis. So he indicated La'az, you know, if you read Rashi and Chumash, he often says La'az, meaning in a foreign language. So he spoke in this foreign language of Greek wisdom and said to the people outside, Amalhen Kozmansha Oiskim Ba'avoida. As long as you're allowing them to offer the sacrifices in the temple, you'll never be able to conquer Yerushalayim. Lemacha shilshulu lahem dinarim bekupa. So the following day, when they lowered down the bucket of money, ve'alu lahem chazir. Instead of a sheep, they put a pig in the bucket to send up for the sacrifice. Kevin sheyagir lachatzi choyma. When this pig got halfway up the wall, Natsiponav, it stuck its fingernails, its hoofs into the walls of the city. V'nizdazeh Eretz Yisrael Abos Parsa, and there was an earthquake, the whole of Eretz Yisrael shook at the calamity that had happened. Aisa Shah Amru, so at that moment, the rabbis made a decree and said, Amru, Arur Adam Shigdal Chazirim, cursed is a man who raises pigs. And cursed is a person who teaches their son Greek wisdom, because it led to the destruction of the temple. So far, so good. Whatever Chochmas Yevanis is, it's forbidden, with good reason. But the Gemara continues and says, Eini, is that true? Bahama Rebbe. Rebbe says, Eretz Yisrael Loshon Surasi Lama. Why does anybody who lives in Eretz Yisrael speak Syrian, whatever this Galilean Aramaic dialect? Why would you speak such a thing? Ela or Loshon HaKodesh or Loshon Yevanis. If you live in Israel, speak like the natives. Either speak Loshon HaKodesh, which I'll mistranslate as Hebrew for the sake of argument, or speak Greek. V'amar Rav Yosef, b'Bavel lashon Arami lama. Why would you ever speak Aramaic if you live in Bavel? Ela or lashon Kodesh or lashon Parsi. Either speak lashon Kodesh or speak Persian. So how can you tell me that it's aser if Rebbe is saying you should speak Greek? Umar says, no. Lashon Yavanis Lechud v'chachmas Yavanis Lechud. There's two different things. There's a Greek language, which is no problem at all. You can learn Greek to your heart's content. And chachmas Yavanis is a different thing, and that's aser to teach. The Gemara says, hang on. The chachmas Yavanis mi asira. Is it really aser to learn chachmas Yavanis? V'ham Rav Yehuda ha-mishmul mishum rishim ben Gamliel. Right, Rabbi Yehuda says name Mishmul, name Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel was the Nasi. Right, my dechsi. What does the pasuk in Eicha mean? Eini olala lenavshi mikol benos iri. My eyes weep for the children of the princes. It means elef yeladim hayu bebeis abba. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says my father, Rabbi Gamliel, had 1,000 students in his yeshiva. Chamesh mos lamdu Torah. One base midrash had 500 people learning Torah. V'chamesh mos lamdu chochmas yivanis. And 500 were learning chochmas yivanis. So why in Eicha? Why are we crying? Lo nishtar mihen ela ani kan uben achi abba be'asya. And the only two remnants of this 1,000 person base midrash are me and my cousin in Asya. So how can you tell me it's asa to learn chochmas yivanis? If Rabbi Gamliel was teaching, half his base midrash was learning Chochmas Yavanis. It says, Shaini Shobes Rabbi Gamliel, Dekroivin Lemalchus Havu. Rabbi Gamliel was an exception. It's true that it's forbidden to learn Chochmas Yavanis. Don't go near it. But Rabbi Gamliel, who all the time was dealing with the Roman leaders and was training the next generation of leaders, they had to understand Chochmas Yavanis so they could communicate, so they could negotiate, so they could be part of the society at large. So half his base midrash was learning Torah, the other half base midrash was learning politics. So we still come out. Clearly it's asa to learn Chochmas Yavanis, unless you happen to need it for the sake of Klal Yisrael, for the sake of dealing with the leadership, the non-Jewish leadership. But we haven't yet defined what Chochmas Yavanis is. Says the Gemara Menachos, Tzadi Tes. I'm debating whether to tell you the whole thing or just the first half. Tzadi Tes, Amud Beis. And Menachos. Anyone here in Amharic? It's also to say it's in front of an Amharic. Shaul ben Dama ben Achasai shel Rabbi Yishmael is Rabbi Yishmael. Ben Dama, who was the nephew of Rabbi Yishmael, asked Rabbi Yishmael the following question. Kigon ani, someone like me, shelamadati kol haTorah kula, I've learned the entire Torah. I know everything. Mahu lilmad chochmas yavanis. Is it permitted for me to learn chochmas yavanis? To which the answer should be, of course not, it's asa. We just learned the Gemara Sota. You clearly skipped that page. He says, Kara lava mikra zer, Rabbi Yishmael said to his nephew, applied the following pasuk, Lo yamush sefer Torah azer mipicha, ve'gisa bo yomon v'layla. The book of the Torah should not depart from your mouth, and you should involve yourself with it day and night. Pasuk in Yeshua. It says, Stay of Dok Shah Sha'ena Loimina Yom Vloimina Laila Ulamud Ba Chochmas Yavanis. You have to learn Torah day and night. So go find a time that's not day and not night, and then you can learn Chochmas Yavanis. Okay. In parentheses, the next line. Well, please, Rabbi Shmuel bar Nachmani, Amr Shmuel bar Nachmani, Amr Yonason. Pasuk zeh ein eloichav elo mitzvah elo bracha. I'm looking. Is a machlokes whether this pasuk begisibo yomam v'layla is an obligation or is a bracha that you will have the opportunity. If you have the opportunity to learn Torah day and night, that's a bracha. Why did Rabbi Yishmael not say to his nephew that it's asa to learn Chochmas Yevanis? He said it's bittul Torah. Good, okay, bittul Torah. True. But he should have said it's asa. Rather, we're forced to say that there's two things that are both called Chochmas Yevanis. There's one which led to the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, and there's one which would be a good thing to learn if you didn't have to be learning Torah the whole time. The Rambam in Pirush Mishnayos on Sota explains that Chochmas Yevanis, the kind of Chochmas Yevanis that's forbidden, again, it's not the Greek language, we know that's permitted. Right. So what is it? He says, Shayu mechanim es harimazim shebedibur. Kein dvarim she'enam kipshutam, aliyeshlem inyan nister. That's chachma. That they had some kind of sign language or hidden message in the words that they were saying. That if you didn't know the secret code, you'd hear one thing. But chachmas yevanis is a way of speaking and communicating, understanding where there's a subtext to what was being said. Which is why this Zaken Echad in Yerushalayim was able to shout out over the ramparts of Yerushalayim without anybody else noticing, because he was using a secret code, which we don't know what it is. Right? That secret code is called Chochmas Yevanis and led to the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. But that Chochmas Yevanis is forbidden. There's another thing called Chochmas Yevanis, which is confusing because it's two names of the same thing. Rather, one name for two things. That's what Ben Dama was asking Rabbi Yishmael whether he was allowed to learn or not. The Rivash, who's a Rishon, in Tshuva Memhei 45. Ma'ashe she'alta, ma'ayi chochmas yivanis ashe yisrachek ha'adam. Right. What is this thing called Chochmas Yevanis, which a person should not learn? V'im heim ha'isam sfarim ha'mefursamim ba'olam kishmoa tiv'i u'mah shachar teva. Does it refer to those National Geographic magazines, Scientific American, that tells you about the nature of the world and what's behind the nature of the world? It's a long, not a very long tshuva. It's a great tshuva to learn. But in the second paragraph here, the Rivash says, Omnam, Sifrei HaTeva HaMefursamim, those books of science, of nature, the famous, well-known books of science, which presumably is what was then called Greek philosophy. The distinction between science and philosophy is a comparatively modern invention. When they talk about Greek philosophy, that included not only metaphysics, but also physics. Also science, mathematics, geometry, algebra. I don't know whether algebra was around then. As well as the philosophical wisdom of the Plato, Aristotle. He says, Sifrei HaTeva Mefursamim Loi Men Hashem Huzet. Right? These books of science are not the prohibition of Chochmas Yevanis. Aval Ra'ui Limana Mihem Im Hei Mitamtzim Lako Ikrei Torah Seinu HaKadosha. However, it's not included in the prohibition, but it's better not to learn them if they're going to deny fundamentals of Jewish faith. Ubiprat shnei amudei hatavich asher inechayin aleihem shezeh chidush ha'olam v'ashgachas Hashem yisbarach v'pratei hamin ha'enoshi. Especially if they deny the two fundamental principles of Judaism, which are that God created the world, the world does not exist forever, and that God is mashkiach, God is involved in the world, God sees what's going on in the world. Right? He says the science books are dangerous because they bring proofs that seem to contradict these principles of Torah. But ekroni, learning science, if it would not contradict these principles, would be of, certainly not forbidden, and possibly of benefit. The really interesting thing for me, they don't, for some reason, tend to teach this in yeshivas, but this should be shiur number one when you come to yeshiva. Hilchos Talmud Torah. What are we doing here? There's halachas about how to learn Torah. Everyone thinks it's easy, just start learning. There's halachas. Resh Mem, Hey Resh Mem Vav in Yoredeh. If you didn't learn anything else tonight, at least you learned the Hilchos Talmud Torah is in Yoredeh. Took me a long time to figure that out. So, the Shulchan Aruch, the Mechaber, discusses what you should learn, what you shouldn't learn, meaning you have to divide your day up into three. If you learn Kiddushin, you should divide your day into three. Mikra, Mishnah, Gemara. The Ramah says, in Sif Dalet, V'yeshavim shubh Talmud Bavli, shubh Balo, v'mikra, Mishnah, Gemara, Adam Yatzei Yedecho, v'asoy, b'shvil, hako. Famous answer of Tosfos. Nowadays, if you learn the Babylonian Talmud, that includes within it. Why is it called Bavli? Because it's Balu min Hakol. It's a mixture of all the different pieces of Torah you have to learn. It's got Chumash, it's got Mishnah, it's got Gemara. V'ein la'adam l'ilmad ki'im mikra Mishnah b'gemara v'aposkim enim shachim achareihim. A person should only learn Mikra Tanakh. We don't learn that. Okay. Mishnah, we don't learn that either. Gemara. Right, so they're all included in the Babylonian Talmud. V'apoyskim anim shachim acharem and psak halacha, Mishneh Berurah, Chochmas Adam, or whatever you learn. U'bezei yikne ha'olam hazeh v'olam haba. And in such a way a person will acquire olam hazeh and olam haba, which in principle is the same answer the Rabbi Yishmael gave to his nephew. Avaloi belimut shara chochmas, a person should not learn other kinds of wisdom. And he quotes the Rivash. However, says the Rama, Mikol Makom. Nevertheless, remember Rabbi Yishmael said, if you can find a time that's not day and not night, then you can learn Chochmas Yevamos. Says the Rama, Mikol Makom, Mutar L'Lamod B'Akrai B'Shar Chochmas. It is permitted to learn occasionally the other kinds of wisdom, science, nature. U'bilvad shelo yiyu sifrei minim, provided they're not heretical. V'zehu nikra bein hachamim, and this is what the sages refer to when they say tiul b'pardes, the walk in paradise. Tiul b'pardes is a phrase which means learning Kabbalah. Says the Rama in Shulchan Aruch, it means learning science. V'ein la'adam l'tayel b'pardes rak l'achar shemalei kreisa basa v'yayim. A person should not learn science, should not learn this pardes, right? Pshat v'rashot. Until they've filled their belly with meat and wine. Meaning, v'hu leida isa v'heta v'dinei mitzvahs. Only after they know what's muta, what's asa, and all the laws of the mitzvahs, then they can learn Shar Chochmas, which is what Ben Dama was asking Rabbi Yishmael. Once you finish learning Kol HaTorah Kulo, find a time that's not day and not night, which the Rama says means occasionally. Then you can learn these things. Of course, the Shach says, what's he talking about? The Gra, fantastic Gra over here. His commentary on Shulchan Aruch. He says. Who medivra Rambam? Right. This Rama is taken straight from the Rambam. In Farshzeo Dalish Nefnasul Apardes. He understands that's the meaning of the Gemara Chagiga on your Dalit Amud base, that four rabbis went to the Parades, Rabbi Akiva, Reshi ben Avuya, ben Zoma, and ben Azai. The Lachain Nenshu, the reason they were punished, right? One died, one went crazy, one became not from, and only Rabbi Akiva survived, came out b'shalom. Shoklam Rachim b'shanim, they were too young. Chutz Rabbi Akiva, v'acher, except for Rabbi Akiva and Acher, Reshi ben Avuya. Says the Acher had a different problem. Right? Says the Gra, in referring to the Rambam and the Rama, Avaloi Ra'u es Pardes, Loi Hu Veloi Rambam. The Rama doesn't know what the Pardes says, he doesn't know anything about Kabbalah, neither him nor the Rambam. And he goes on proving that learning science is not what Kabbalah is, not what this metaphor of Til the Pardes. Okay, so the Gra knew Kabbalah. And he claims that the Rambam and the Rama did not know Kabbalah. How could the Rama have made this mistake? And this is really what I want to, the title of my talk. How could the Rama get confused, in inverted commas, between science and Kabbalah? That's a big difference. Let's say he didn't know Kabbalah. Right? According to many opinions, the Rambam didn't know Kabbalah. Tradition in Spain went through the Ramban, not the Rambam. Whole discussion about what he knew, what he didn't know. At the end of his life, he changed his mind. He did. I don't know, whatever it is. But how could he think? How could he think that Kabbalah means to learn science? And the Rama following in his footsteps. How could he think that these two are the same thing? Says Rav Tzadok HaKohen, an amazing idea. He says that Kabbalah is the pnimius, and Chochmas Yevanis is the chitzonius. What does that mean? Learning Zohar, learning Etz Chaim is the pnimius. Learning Scientific American is the chitzonius. He doesn't really explain what he means over there. I'd like to suggest the following answer. What mitzvah, I don't know how many of you are over 40, married with children, beard, no collar, Torah kula. Any of you who learn Kabbalah, or even if you don't, you want to hazard a guess. What mitzvah are you doing when you're learning Kabbalah? Apart from the mitzvah Talmud Torah. Okay, but you could learn Gemara. What extra mitzvah are you doing when you're learning Kabbalah?
Mitzvah to know God.
Oh. The mitzvah, the first of the Ten Commandments. Right? To know God. Anochi Hashem Elokecha. To know God. And Rav Tzadok says this at length, that the way to know God is to learn Kabbalah. And if you haven't learned Kabbalah, you can't do that mitzvah. Okay, not everyone can do that mitzvah fully. What mitzvah do you do, according to the Rambam, when you learn science?
Same mitzvah.
It's a good answer. Good guess. Not quite right, though.
Knowing his creation.
Oh. I think it's near enough for jazz. That when you're learning science, says the Rambam, you're also doing the same mitzvah, or close enough to the same mitzvah, of knowing God. In Hilchos Tshuva, right? Luckily, the Rambam wrote 10 chapters in Hilchos Tshuva. And there's 10 days so we can learn one chapter every day from Rosh Hashanah to Yom Kippur. That's the lucky part. The bad news is that for some reason they put Rosh Hashanah and Sam Gedalia and Yom Kippur in those 10 days, so no one ever gets past chapter 6 anyway. If you would get to the end of chapter 10 of Hilchos Tshuva, the Rambam finishes in the same way that he starts the whole Mishnah Torah. Davar Yedua Ubaror. Right, says in this edition, it's chapter 10, halacha 6. Davar yadua baro, it's known and clear. She'ein avas HaKadosh Baruch Hu nikshares b'libo shel Adam. That the love of God is not firmly attached in the heart of a person. When the Rambam, when the Rishonim say heart, they always mean the brain, what we would call the brain today. It's an intellectual process. The heart was the seat of the intellect. Which is, if you ever put on tefillin, you learn the halachas of tefillin, you said the kavanas before you put on tefillin. Arini mishabed, es an neshama shebemoichi, ves a chokma shebelibi. So the only way that the love of God can become firmly attached intellectually to a person, right, is ad sheyashgeh bo tamid kirui, until a person, it's not clear what the word yashgeh means, but a person becomes lovesick for God, v'yazav kol sheva olam chutz mimena, and abandons everything else in the world apart from God. K'mo sheziva v'amar b'chol levavcha b'chol nafshecha. Love God. Ela b'dea shiyad'ehu, in the knowledge, as you said, of knowing God. Ba'al pi ha'dea al pi ahava. The more you know God, the more you love God. Im ma'at ma'at, v'im harbe harbe. A little or a lot, your knowledge of God is dependent on your love of God. Lefikach, therefore, says the Rambam, in the end of Hilchos Tshuva, you're learning this on Yom Kippur. Therefore a person has to dedicate themselves to understanding, to knowing, to rationalizing the wisdom and the knowledge that make known to a person his creator according to this person's ability. The ability that he has to understand, to attain, as we explained in Hilchos Yesodei Torah. What does Rambam say in Hilchos Yesodei Torah? That the way to know God, Hech yaderech la'ava v'lirasai, b'shar sh'yizbonin ha'adam b'ma'asav u'b'ru'yav ha'nifloim ha'gdoilim, when a person contemplates God's actions, God's wonders, the natural world, when you see the hand of God in every law of nature, in every atom, in every supernova, and the more you study science, the more you discover God, and the more you discover God, the more you love God and know God. Chapters 3 and 4 of Rambam's Yesodei HaTorah, the opening of Mishneh Torah, is difficult for us to understand nowadays, because he's basically explaining the Aristotelian view of the universe. And he says all sorts of interesting ideas, wheels within wheels, spheres. One of the things he says over here is that everything, tachas hashamayim, is made of the four elements: fire, earth, wind, water. Anything above the shamayim is made of a fifth element, which of course is quintessential, the fifth element. And therefore, and he says explicitly that the moon is made of this fifth element, and there's no connection, there can be no possible connection between the physical world of the four elements and the heavenly world of this fifth element. I don't know how many of you were around in August of 1969. But Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin walked on the moon. So, if you'll allow me that it was not made in a Hollywood studio, but that they actually walked on the moon, this presents a tremendous problem for the Rambam. How can the Rambam write in a halacha book that it's impossible to walk on the moon? And yet we see that people did go to the moon, did walk on the moon, played golf on the moon. And this problem bothered Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky for weeks, months. He went, according to his grandsons, he went to watch on television the moon landing. He was sure it wasn't going to happen. He was sure it was impossible because the Rambam says it's impossible.
Because of gravity? Why is it impossible?
No, because the moon is outside the sphere of the... It's in the sphere of the heavens. And therefore it's not made of the same matter as the earth. It'd be like something physical trying to touch something spiritual. It's impossible. He walked around perplexed by this for a long time. And he eventually came to the conclusion, which they wrote up in Emes the Yaakov, and he wrote, this was published in his lifetime, he approved of Emes the Yaakov, right, on Bereishis 1:1, page Tet Zayin. Came to the conclusion, Bal korcheno anetz rechino ma'asha ma'asha ma'asalan rambam v'rakim enu, ein ze lo'y ma'asa merkava v'lo'y ma'asa Bereishis. That what the Rambam's teaching us and helps us to study a Torah, this Aristotelian science, he's not telling us something that he learnt as a tradition, as part of the Maisa Merkava, Maisa Bereishis. And like a Tav, Kol Dal Prakim Eila, Midata Rechava, Bitoch Yediot, Bechachmas Achitzonius. He wrote it as a science textbook. Klomar, Shaloi Mechachmas Torah. The whole of Mishnah Torah is the Word of God. Whole of Mishnah Torah is Torah Misinai, except these four chapters of Aristotelian science, which is Chochmah Chitzonius, Kavashama Chochmah Zatorah, Elahare, Hen Philosophia Ba'alma. Why did the Rambam write these things? Rambam Kasa Prakim Elu Rak B'Tor Hakdama L'Sefer Yad Chazaka. This is the introduction, because this is underlying everything he's going to talk about. Ikra Sefer Matkil Miperek Hay. The real Mishnah Torah starts from chapter 5 of the study of Torah, which is Kol Beis Rabban Sivan Kiddush Hashem. The only reason he says that he wrote these four chapters is so that we wouldn't need to look in science textbooks, which may contain heretical ideas. So he wrote a science textbook and put it in the beginning of the Mishnah Torah as the basis of everything else that we do. I once asked one of his grandsons, does that mean, according to Rabbi Yaakov, does that mean that today we'd be better off learning Newton's physics or Einstein's general theory of relativity instead of the first four chapters, or at least those two chapters of Mishnah Torah? He said, yes, absolutely, that's what it means. But the Rambam is telling us that a preamble to learning halacha is to know science. In the Moreh Nevuchim, which is the Rambam writing his book on Maisa Merkava, Maisa Bereishis, he begins with what in this English tradition is called Epistle Dedicatory. My honored pupil, Rabbi Joseph, etc., etc. Right. So he's writing this whole book to Yosef, his student. And he saw there is a very smart guy. Right? Yosef had studied with the Rambam, and then he went away to Alexandria, and now he's becoming corrupted by the Kalam, and the Rambam's writing Moreh Nevuchim to remove the ideas of the Kalam. Right? He says, this is the penis translation, what can I do? When thereupon you read under my guidance texts dealing with the science of astronomy, and prior to that text dealing with mathematics, which is necessary as an introduction to astronomy, my joy in you increased because of the excellence of your mind and the quickness of your grasp. I saw that your longing for mathematics was great, and hence I let you train yourself in that science, etc., etc. Somebody has an opportunity to learn Bechavrusa with the Rambam. Can you imagine what that would be? What would a brisker give to learn Bechavrusa with the Rambam? And he's learning science and mathematics and astronomy. But for the Rambam, that's essential before you can start learning even halacha, certainly before you can start talking about hashkafa or anything that's contained within Moreh Nevuchim. And several times through Moreh Nevuchim, he says, you, my reader, right? you, the kind of person who's already finished learning all of the science, all of the mathematics, all of the astronomy, right? You've learned physics, and now you want to learn metaphysics. That's what Moreh Nevuchim is for. So that, to answer the question, how could the Rambam think, and how could the Rama think, that science is really Kabbalah? Because they're both doing the same thing. They're both bringing us closer to God, bring us to a knowledge of God, bring us to a love of God, bring us to a relationship with God. And I think that's what Rav Tzadok means when he says that Kabbalah is the pnimius. The way to know God through pnimius is through Kabbalah, and the chitzonius way to know God through chitzonius is through science. Chochmas Yevamos. And I think that's the breaches in the walls of the Srog, of the Sorig, sorry. The 13 breaches in the walls, which are rebuilt, means that a Greek way of thinking came into Judaism. The conflict of cultures led to a new way of seeing the world. Rav Tzadok elsewhere writes that when an idea comes into the world, it comes into the world in all sorts of different ways. The same idea appears in Greek culture and in Jewish culture and in Roman culture. Throughout history, when the time is right for an idea, for an invention, for a concept, that idea appears in the world in many different ways at once. Which is, I suppose, how Al Gore could invent the internet. So that the Chachamim changed Judaism at the same time that the Greeks breached the walls of the temple. And they made it kosher by fixing the walls. But allowing it in and then putting limits on it deserves bowing. What do I mean by that? In Seder Olam Rabba, written by one of the Tanaim, at the very end, tells a story which also appears in the Gemara Numa about Alexander Macedonia, Alexander Mokdon, came to Yerushalayim to destroy Yerushalayim. I think probably everybody's heard this story, and if not, you'll hear it during the next week of Hanukkah. And Shimon HaTzadik and the Kohanim, Shimon HaTzadik was the Kohen Gadol, they went out from the temple. Shimon HaTzadik dressed in the big day Kohen Gadol, and all the other Kohanim came, and the Levim playing the music, and they went out to meet Alexander. Alexander came, and they went out, and they met up. And Alexander saw Shimon HaTzadik coming, dismounted from his horse, and bowed down before Shimon HaTzadik. And the soldiers who were with Alexander said, "My high." Well, they didn't say "my high," they spoke Greek. But they said, "What's going on? We just came to kill these people and you're bowing down." Alexander said, "Because every time I go into battle, I see this man going in front of me in a vision. And I know I'm going to be successful in battle." Seder Olam Rabba, and if you look in the Vilna Gaon's commentary over there, says that that event marked the end of prophecy and the beginning of Chochmah. That Shimon HaTzadik was the last of the Anshei Knesset HaGedola. Anshei Knesset HaGedola contained within it many prophets. Shimon HaTzadik was also the first person who says a Mishnah. So Machlokas, when we define the beginning of the Tanaim, but Shimon HaTzadik is certainly the first person, the earliest person in a Mishnah to say something. But we changed, Judaism changed from prophecy-based religion to a Chochmah-based religion, something that eventually became the Mishnah-based religion. And I haven't got time, Chaval, I could speak for another hour about that. But I think that the influence, directly or indirectly, of the Greek Chochmah, of the Greek philosophy, mandated a change in the Jewish relationship to God, which is a change from prophecy, from the knowing God, speaking to God directly, to knowing God intellectually, knowing God through reason, knowing God through metaphysics and logic. So it seems that Chochmas Yevamos is forbidden, and that Hanukkah is the celebration of the miracle of the destruction of Chochmas Yevamos, but that's only talking about some special kind of code language. But adarabah, that Greek philosophy Davka through the Chacham, through the Chashmonaim and through Chanukah, through Shimon HaTzadik, Alexander, the Greeks, became an integral part of Judaism. To the extent that if you can find a time that's not day and not night, you should be learning it. When is the time that's not day and not night? When you're in the bathroom. You can't learn Torah. Learn a science book. Don't waste your time. When you're falling asleep at night and can't concentrate on another Tosfos, maybe that's a time that will be permitted to learn science. Only for somebody, and this is I have to stress this, only for somebody who's male kreisai basa v'yayin, as the Rama said, only for somebody who's firm enough in his faith and belief that reading science books are not going to be damaging to his faith. The Arba Shnichos of the Paradis, tell me dinner's not for another 5 minutes, so I'm going to keep talking, I'm sorry. The four people went into the Paradis. Whether Paradis means Kabbalah or whether Paradis means Greek wisdom, philosophy, science. So Acher was so disturbed by what he found there that it says, Kitzetz b'netiot. He chopped down the saplings. He rebelled against God. And a very interesting piece of Gemara in Chagiga, on Tesvav, Amud Aleph, and Amud Beis, which I haven't got time to go through. Basically, he broke as many mitzvahs as he could. He heard a voice coming out of heaven saying that everybody can do tshuva except for Acher. So he said, if I'm not going to get Olam Haba, I may as well make the most of Olam Hazeh. And he did, fine. But making the most of Olam Hazeh also means learning Torah. Because how can you not learn Torah? And his student, Rabbi Meir, used to learn Torah with him the whole time. Gemara talks about Acher was riding on a horse on Shabbos, and Rabbi Meir was walking along beside him, learning from him. And Acher said, you know, I've been measuring, we've now got to Tchum Shabbos, this is as far as you're allowed to walk. Right? The whole Gemara there is fascinating, amazing Gemara. Okay, so the Gemara asks, the Gemara says that when Acher died, they didn't know what to do with him in heaven. They couldn't bring him into Gan Eden because he'd committed every sin in the book. And they couldn't throw him into Gehenna because he's a big Talmud Chacham who taught Torah. So he was left hanging. Rabbi Meir said, can't have that. So Rabbi Meir says, when I die, I'm going to take Acher in for judgment, so that eventually he'll be able to get into Olam Haba. Kachava, when Rabbi Meir died, smoke started coming out of the grave of Acher. Along comes Rabbi Yochanan, a couple of generations later, and says, what kind of kavod is this to barbecue your Rebbe? He says, taking your Rebbe to be punished, that's no good. When I die, says Rabbi Yochanan, I'm going to bring him into Olam Haba. And when Rabbi Yochanan died, this fire stopped, the smoke stopped from Acher's grave. The Gemara says, how could Rabbi Meir learn Torah from Acher? Because we have a principle that if your teacher is like the Domel Malach Hashem Tzvakos, is like an angel, you can learn Torah from him. But if he's not, you shouldn't learn Torah from him. So how was Rabbi Meir able to learn Torah from Acher? Not only did he learn Torah from Rabbi Meir, the Gemara is full of things that Rabbi Meir learned from Acher. There's an opinion in the Gemara that every time, I mean, it's clear, the Gemara in Horiyah says, whenever the Gemara says, Acherim Omrim, in the Mishnayos, it rises, Acherim Omrim, that's always Rabbi Meir. That's the end of Horiyah. And when it says, Yesh Omrim, that's Rabbi Yosef. The whole story that happened over there. One opinion is that Acherim, Rabbi Meir is called Acherim, because that's the Torah he learned from Acher, from Elisha ben Avuya. So when we're sitting learning Gemara, every other page we're seeing Torah from Elisha ben Avuya. Says the Gemara, how could Rabbi Meir learn Torah from Acher? And it answers, Rabbi Meir found a pomegranate, a metaphorical pomegranate, and he threw away the external husk, the skin, and he ate the inside. In other words, he was able to learn Torah from Acher because he threw away all of the externals, all the stuff that was bad and damaging in Acher, and only took the sweet fruit inside, the Torah. Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, who wrote the Mishnah, lived before Rabbi Yochanan. That means that Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi could have gone to visit Acher's grave and seen the smoke coming up, signifying he was burning in hell. That Acher was in Gehenna. And yet he puts him in the Mishnah. In Pirkei Avos we have a Mishnah in the name of Elisha ben Avuya. How is it possible that we have a Mishnah from somebody that Rebbe could see was frying? The answer is, if you're able to discern the good stuff from the bad stuff, then you should take what you can get. In other words, there's some good stuff there. If you're on a level to see what's good and what's bad, to take out, get rid of the rubbish, the garbage, if you're an American, and keep the good stuff, then you're allowed to learn that Torah. And IMHO, as they say in text language, which is not Chachmas Yevanis, but probably should be. In my humble opinion, it could be that somebody who is educated and raised in the Western world and familiar with all sorts of scientific theories and understands all sorts of things outside the world of Torah, who's grown and developed from to see the truth, to see God in everything, to understand that God created the world, that God's Mashgiach in the world. It could be that a person like that is able to discern in a science book the difference between what's true and what's garbage. And that somebody like that should be learning science in the times when they can't be learning Torah in order to come to know God, in order to come to love God and to fear God. Happy Hanukkah. Sure.